welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And tonight we have another great show dealing with metaphysics and science and spirituality and a whole bunch of other, we'll say, related topics and sometimes not that related, but nonetheless interesting. I thought tonight we'd deal with the area of thought, perception, and reality and how that fits in with metaphysics. Now, this is a show that tonight is going to have probably a little bit more science in it. So people who like science, this might be their show. But it's going to also have a different view on how the universe functions. And for some people, if you happen to be a physicist, this might be an interesting show to see an alternate view of, we'll say, what could be a new model in physics. So an alternate view of the old model and what could be a new model in physics. And this is something that's been something I've written about now for a long time and taught. But nonetheless, it actually goes back in time to antiquity. So the odd thing about it is we're going to be talking about some advanced elements in physics that actually were understood before recorded history. Now you think about that while I talk about it. All right, here it goes. First of all, one of the concepts that I have suggested many times, and is suggested again in Ageless Wisdom going back before recorded time, is that the creator of our universe, God, is really composed of three parts. Sometimes I refer to it as God's mind. And those three parts involve two of them together, we'll say, involve thought, and when they're together. But when they're not together, they come out to be the following. They come out to be freedom and choices and, we'll say, will. Some people would say will. Some people might also say the purpose of existence sometimes is referred to. And other times, it comes out to be more on the side of sacrifice, which is oftentimes mentioned in a more spiritual context. So this is the first element of thought. Thought involves choices, okay? But the choices have to do more than just be a choice. They have to be more than just a purpose. They have to be more than just even a sacrifice. They also have to be connected together, so there's a commonality to them, or a direction which affects the field that they exist in. Now, I'm not going to go into fields right now, but that has to be part of the equation. So when you put the two together, you got the choices, you got the direction, sometimes referred to as direction is also referring to consciousness or love, planning. All of these things go into this second part. You put the two together and you end up with thought. So let me give you an example of what I mean. Let's say I'm making a bunch of choices, but my choices are disconnected. So I say, oh, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, I'm going to run around here, I'm going to do that, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to do that. But they're not connected to any direction. They don't limit the field I'm in. They don't have an effect on future thought, that means. And therefore, they are not thought. It isn't a thought until there's a connection between two parts, two choices, two elements of the first part, and that's connected by direction and love or inclusiveness to the second part. And it's a pretty important concept because some people think that just choices make a thought, which they don't. And some people think that just love or consciousness makes a thought, and it doesn't. So you've got to put these two together to achieve what we would call, by the metaphysical definition I'm giving you, thought. Okay, that's an interesting part of this whole show, because the metaphysics of thought, perception, and reality has to be in exactly that pattern. It requires that there be legitimate thought in order to get to the understanding of what this show is about. Next, let's talk about perception. What is perception? Well, that deals with the third part of the Creator's mind. We got the first two parts. When you put them together, you got thought. And the third part, perception, has to do with activities. In order for there to be a perception of something, there has to be one or more activities that are taking place, that is taking place. Otherwise, there's nothing to perceive. The interesting part about this is that most people do not think about their world in terms of what we're talking about right now. So perception doesn't seem to make much difference to a lot of people. They just call it, well, I have a sense of this or I have a sense of that, and that's what I perceive. But perception is very critical because by taking this third part of God, which is called intelligent activity, when it's in God's way of creation, it's intelligent. When it's against God's way of creation, then it's unintelligent activity. But regardless, that is the foundation of all perception. Now, why do I say that? Well, because perception requires the use of what comes out of activity, and that's called energy. And in order to perceive anything, you have to have a sense, and the sense is made out of energy, and it attracts to itself more energy, provided the energy that it is put together with is of equal or greater intelligence than the energy that it's perceiving. And the thought behind it also has enough, we'll call it, cohesiveness to itself. In other words, the first two parts of thought are together enough so that the third part of energy can be somewhat understood. So the result is, when we put this whole thing together, and I realize I'm going very fast here. If I'm confusing you, it'll kind of clear up after we go further into examples about this. But so you put this all together, and you end up with three very significant parts to the universe. The first two parts, which are thought, and thought also, when it refers to God, is spirit. So thought that is a replication of God's thought, or similar in some way to God's thought, is spiritual thought, or sometimes it's referred to as spirit. And perception can be either perception that is intelligent, which means that through the perceiving use, or use of perception, whatever is perceiving, whatever information it's getting, it can use that information in an intelligent way. If it can do that, then it's intelligent activity or intelligent information. When it is unintelligent or lacks intelligence, that means that the perception is reduced in each time that it's made, or each time that is shared with anything else. So increasing accuracy in perception is intelligence, and decreasing accuracy in perception, and a reduction leading to a reduction in perception is unintelligence and away from God's mind. Okay, when you put all these things together, what does that mean? Well, it means that the universe is composed of these three things before anything else. That's the bottom line. And I mean, yes, I could have gone into a whole show just dealing with the first things I just talked about in the first 10 minutes here. But the point is that I'm not. I'm just going through it very quickly. If you picked up enough to just stay in step with a little bit of what I'm saying, that's fine. Because we don't have to go into all the reasons why everything I just said are correct. That's a whole long explanation. But it's close enough as I can get without wasting a lot of show time trying to explain every bit of that very, very difficult, complex, but nonetheless profound understanding of how the universe works. Now, put together all three of these things, preempt everything else that exists in the universe. Why? Because they represent or are God. When the thought is spiritual and the perception leads to greater levels of perception and higher levels of intelligence. Some people would say in place of perception we could use the word less illusion, okay? Clarity, enlightenment. There's a lot of words you could use. I'm using perception because it doesn't connotate anything in most people's minds. It's just they can understand it more directly. So we're going to use perception. So when you put these three things together, voila, you got yourself one heck of a great system. And that's a good thing. But it's very simplistic, yet extremely powerful. And it explains a lot of the reasons why modern-day physics is kind of in a quandary. It can't explain how the universe really works because it's mostly based upon perception. It ignores thought. And therefore, it's looking for God, if it's looking for God at all, through only a third of God's mind, which is pretty much a near impossibility. And most of the time, because it is only trying to deal with perception, it isn't even looking for God, because it doesn't believe there is God, because perception in itself is too limiting to gain the enormity of understanding necessary to understand the universe and its creator, especially its creator. So what does it mean to only look at the universe in terms of perception? Well, it means that physics is a science of observation of some sort, and until about the 1900s, the beginning of the 20th century, it was considered strictly that. In other words, physics was considered to be a science where someone would observe something, make measurements, then come to some theory that was predictable, and then there were experiments done to prove or disprove the theory, etc. That's science, by most people's understanding. There was a problem that occurred in physics, because it had that understanding of itself, and all the sciences did, and still do to some extent. And that problem was that the scientists who, in the beginning of the 20th century, who examined more closely physics and started to deal with a world that could be easily observed, discovered that whether you could observe it or not, there was a new kind of physics that suggested that the universe is not connected to, directly, the singular element of perception. Because when you used only the singular element of perception, the universe becomes impossible, inexplicable to define. It's undefinable. Until this day, that is still the case. Till this day, the universe is still undefinable. It is still unclassifiable because of this new physics that basically said that was going to be the result, because we were using and still try to mostly perception. That is a shame. And that new physics is called quantum physics. The beginning of quantum physics was based upon the attempt to come up with a purely perceptual model. And for that reason, it was called quantum mechanics, just like physics was based originally on physical mechanics. So quantum mechanics had to do with the probability of certain things taking place or not taking place, but with the absolute impossibility to have an absolute. A contradiction in terms. And so the original quantum physicists, which included some people who weren't really considering themselves quantum physicists, including Albert Einstein, the original folks in that era, for the first 30 or 40 years, were caught in a dilemma. They were involved in a science that was a contradiction in terms, and were failing to recognize the work of some fairly famous compatriots of theirs. A fellow named Heisenberg came up with the fact that all of physics is based upon the wrong concept. The concept of physics was in terms of absolutes, and Heisenberg said there's nothing in the universe that is absolute. Everything is based upon, rather than observation, is actually based upon a factor of, we'll call it uncertainty. And the level of uncertainty was determined, about 25 years before Heisenberg, by a guy named Max Planck, who discovered mathematically this very fact, that the universe was basically uncertain. And the number of the amount of uncertainty in the universe was actually mathematically determined, except that the people then didn't realize they were only talking about a small fraction of the universe, but the universe that they knew about. And still today, some people will argue that that is the universe. And that number is called the quantum constant. And it's a constant of uncertainty. And it's used continually in physics today without recognition of what it really means. What am I telling you? I'm telling you that physicists lie to each other, and more often to the rest of us, because they don't want everybody to know that what they're talking about is a bunch of bunk, because it is based upon theories of certainty that cannot be certain. They can't be, because they are using only perception. And their science is based upon perception. And their math, even when they include the amount of uncertainty, doesn't exactly work. As a matter of fact, it rather strongly doesn't work when dealing with extremely small things in comparison to extremely, hugely big things. It just doesn't work. Now, the reason it doesn't work because of those vast differences in sizes is that when you deal with such extremes, the uncertainty is not what they think it is. They think the uncertainty is constant, when in reality it becomes inconstant or unconstant or whatever word you want to use. It is no longer constant. In other words, this quantum constant changes when you change things by changing ratios of smallness to largeness, or when you introduce something beyond perception. That's something Heisenberg found in the mid-1920s to be thought. Thought, right. No kidding. So since the mid-1920s, physicists have known that energy follows thought to some infinitesimally small amount in the present reality we call this world, or this universe. But what they don't know is that there are other parts of the universe where the quantum constant grows in great enormity, and the difference between objects of less than the most small to the most large is affected much greater amounts, much greater amounts, and in such vast amounts that literally reality, as we call it, is controlled not by perception, by thought. This causes a great deal of, we'll say, confusion. Strangely enough, the confusion appears to be mostly in the minds of physicists, because they have chosen to ignore some of the fundamental tenets of the beginnings of quantum physics. Now, you can ask yourself, why would some great minds, Nobel laureates, etc., ignore the most fundamental aspects of some of the most accepted science, because quantum physics is the most accepted and proven, in that way, science of physics yet. Yet, it is also ignored where it doesn't fit their desires. Now, what are their desires? Most physicists, even though they claim to be quantum physicists, still rely upon the perception model. Now, why do they do that? Because they live in the macro universe. They live in a very big part of the universe. And they don't live in the micro, nano, below nano parts of the universe, where perception would only lead to greater levels of uncertainty, because you could have two different perceptors that would contradict each other, because they have such a great effect on the question of certainty. And it would cause a tremendous problem. So they don't, they just ignore it. It's literally, they say, well, no, it's not really something we have to deal with, I guess. Except that by ignoring it, it causes all kinds of difficulties in perceiving what the real universe is like. Because you are misperceiving when you think that perception is the way that you find reality. Now, a lot of people are going to say, well, then how do you find reality? I mean, you know, well, there is another way, but it's not very kind either. It's a way of mathematics, which is pure thought. But remember, God is not just thought. God is thought with perception. And the kinds of thought that God is, there are seven kinds, and mathematics is only one of God's seven kinds of thought. So the problem is that when you only relate or only use mathematics to try to find the truth in, say, quantum physics, the math becomes contradictory, and it cancels itself out in certain ways. It produces certain called infinites and other confusing things. It produces numbers that don't make any sense and have multiple answers to the same equations and all kinds of strange things. Now, when all those things take place, physicists want to run away from that, and they do. So they tend to either be purely mathematicians, which then leads them into a thing today called string theorists, and other types of theorists, or they become particle physicists, which leads them into perception. That's where they end up, or they can go in a number of other areas of physics, but they all kind of drop into one side or the other. And it doesn't lead into a unified understanding of how the universe works. So, the rest of the show is going to bring that unified understanding together so that we can have a new kind of metaphysics. Meta means beyond, greater than. Metaphysics about physics, so that we can have one type of unification model, but it has to have the three parts of God's mind in it, because that's what the universe was created from. And you can't ignore that. And you also have to bring God into the picture. And for a number of, quite a few people in the science area, God is a contradiction to them. They don't believe in it, and they don't think that it's a way of finding scientific truths. I say the exact opposite, but we will see. So, let me give you now some very basic ideas of how the universe actually works. And so we'll complete some of Heisenberg's work and some other people after him, and we'll look at what really is going on, so that, including in recent times, about 10 years ago, or actually more than that, some German scientists discovered that, as an example, the speed of light is different if you move into what I call the etheric, but a lot of people call it the electromagnetic, higher energy realms. Light travels at a different speed than it does the rest of us here. You know? And that has to do with this whole concept. Another part of physics, before I move ahead, is relativistic physics, which has to do with the speed of light. It has to also do with gravity. These parts of physics lie almost entirely opposite to quantum physics, because they deal mostly with the macro world, and they deal almost entirely with elements of, we'll call it, the contrary differences between perception and mathematics. So it isn't as though they ignore the problem entirely. They just look at one part of the problem, which is the big part of existence. And in that part of existence, they do pretty good. In other words, if you use the general theory of relativity, you can figure out gravitational issues to a very minute level and get high degrees of accuracy. Or, as an example, if you're concerned about the time model, you can discover that high amounts of gravity causes time to slow down. Or another way to describe it is, if you expend a tremendous amount of energy, which replicates a high amount of gravity, time slows down. And so that's kind of a big part of what we're going to be talking about. But so it is important. It's important to recognize that this was discovered from 1905 on, in the special theory of relativity, and eventually 1969 in the general theory of relativity, that tells us how the universe basically works on a big scale. And it does so in a very plausible but not necessarily easy to understand explanation. Some of it's a little counterintuitive, some of it seems strange. But it is, and has been proven to be true, just the way quantum physics, even more often, has been proven to be true when used only in itself. Okay, so let's talk about why we have such problems and how we can solve those problems. We perceive the universe based upon where we are. Like anything else that exists, we perceive things from the position of the observer. And the observer of us is, we're in a dimension of time and space that I call the seventh, or could be referred to as the physical dimension. It includes the electromagnetic part, where even that part, things are a bit different in, because there are subdimensions. Every dimension has an additional minimum of seven subdimensions to it. So that makes it a complex pattern. That means 7 times 7 is 49 subdimensions to the universe. That's a lot of subdimensions. And each one has some peculiar changes in the way that things take place. The physics is not the same. It is in part if you include a different type of physics. But if you use the physics of most people, called the standard model of physics, if you're into relativistic thought, or the present-day, modern-day explanation of quantum physics, either one of those are not the same when you leave the dimension that we exist in. And that is what causes the big changes. If you change the physics when you change dimensions, then you have to have a physics which is bigger, that can incorporate the entire elements of all dimensionality, and it has to be not based as much on perception and much more based upon not just thought or perception, but upon spiritual thought and intelligent versus unintelligent activity. Then you start getting to the truth about what is happening around us. And we have this opportunity right now to talk about this. And if you've read Life's Hidden Meaning or read any of the articles I've written or listened to this show for a while, some of this, you know, you may already know about or at least had some idea about. Okay. So where does that put us? Where does it lead us into? Well, the quantum constant, which measures the amount of uncertainty due to the thought of the perceiver about anything around the perceiver, the thought has an effect on the energy at the same amount that energy is uncertain. Wow. Okay. And energy is very minimally uncertain where we are in the physical world. The quantum constant is extremely small, like down to the minus 20, 10 to the minus 20. Very, very small levels of changes and below that. So it's a very, 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 very small number here. It still can be measured, believe it or not, based upon certain probability factors that can be measured. But it also can be mathematically computed, and it was in 1900. So when we look at this, and by the way, that's 25 years before there was any perception about it. It was done mathematically first before perception. That's oftentimes true. All right, so now, here's how it really works. Each time we change dimensionality, including a subdimension of dimensionality, there is a shift or change in this constant. It moves to a greater level, okay, of the amount that energy is affected by thought, meaning that the amount of uncertainty in any energy or activity equation, because you can substitute for the word energy activity, produces more and more effect from thought, and therefore greater and greater levels of uncertainty. So let's say you had 1 million people all getting together and using the same thought, and they might get a couple of atoms, where we are in the physical world, to move around differently than they normally would, just by the 1 million people thinking. But if you go to an entire dimension higher, you go to the astral dimension of time and space, say the middle part of it. Some people would say the fourth or fifth subplane. If you go there, the amount of atoms that are affected by the thought of one person is in the billions, compared to a couple of atoms that are affected by maybe 1 million people. You see what's happened. The quantum constant has grown, and the result that energy follows thought is enormously greater. Now, how come it is such a big number? Well, it has to do with the fact that when you increase dimensionality, you have a factorial effect on the amount thought is affecting energy. And also perception goes way up because you have an added element to perception. So your perception has much greater amounts to it at greater distances and speeds and all kinds of other challenging issues that deal with perception. When you add a whole, and which we're talking about, a whole other dimension to both perception and to the effect that thought has on energy. Wow. That is a pretty remarkable way of looking at it. And this changes everything. Because because it means, in terms of logic, that what is really controlling the universe is not what we think as reality. Reality is not a bunch of energy just sitting in one place. As a matter of fact, energy is almost never sitting anywhere. It's always at some level of movement. It's just that the movement is either intelligent or unintelligent. If it's intelligent, it's more like God's mind and spiritual. But when it's unintelligent, it can turn into chaos, which can be used by evil, darkness, for nefarious and destructive practices. So we look at this process. If we say to ourselves, well, the universe is really made up of thought and perception. And therefore, what is real is based upon what you think and how you perceive what other people think. And the result of all that perception on energy, or in other terms, on activity. That's what reality is. That's kind of the upside down to what most people think reality is. Most people think reality is, I'm sitting in a chair, the chair is real. I'm getting into a car, the car is real. Everything about me and everything around me is a form, which is real. Actually, the forms are real because the thought and perception is great enough to create the reality that we perceive and that we think. So the feedback to us is that something external to our thought and perception is what's taking place, but that's untrue. In the physical world, we are so much an illusion that we believe what is real is unreal, and vice versa. So we think that tangible things are real because we don't realize that they exist because beings are thinking strong enough and perceiving enough to be able to maintain the reality that we exist in. Now, do we do that? No. Human beings at the present time on this planet are not capable, for the most part, of altering reality, what they call reality, with their thought alone. They have to use, as a much greater bolster, their own activities. Now, then they can alter all of reality with the three. Their thinking and their reality and their activities can make huge changes in the environment around them, and they do it over time. But it's still... The reality is that we are doing that, but we don't believe it's us. We think that the reality is around us, and we're just playing with the edges of something like that. That's not true, but it is the perception many people have. Well, when we come back, we're going to go into how this all plays out on a daily basis and why it's better to live your life in a godly way, seeing yourself as a part of God, than as a segregated and separate part that may lead to a great amount of illusion and a more negative experience in life. We will be back in about 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight we have a very scientific kind of show. We're dealing with the metaphysics of thought, perception, and reality. And where we stopped was that basically the illusion that most people have while they're physically alive is the world is more or less cast in stone, and there's very little that they can do to change that. And their thought and perception, if they come together to produce intelligent activities, will make significant changes in the environment around them, but most people aren't aware of it quite at that level. And they don't understand what the difference is between an intelligent activity, one that increases perception for yourself and others, and one that is unintelligent, one which decreases perception for yourself and others. And at the same time, not only is it decreasing perception, but it's wasting time and energy. Wasting time and energy. Why is that? Because when an activity is unintelligent, it requires additional amounts of energy to achieve the same amount of activity. And it requires more time in which for that activity to take place. So we can say that when we don't have God's thought or spiritual thought along coupled with intelligent perception or activity, the results are a waste of time and energy. Wow. The other thing it does is it increases the space between all other perceptors. So if you're perceiving and there's other people perceiving, the more unintelligent your perception is, the greater the space between your perception and their perception, and the less and more difficult it is, the less communication there is, and the more difficult it is to communicate. All because these very basic ideas in metaphysics are not presently part of physics, at least not in any, we'll say, significant way. Wow. So this is no small thing, because this actually is controlling what most people think is reality. Yeah, one way or another, the illusions that you experience because you're not following these paradigms, and or the illusions that others are experiencing, causes a great problem with what we call reality. It's actually being modified into a much more, we'll say, selfish, unbeneficial, and reduced understanding of reality. Wow. Tell me that isn't something. Okay, so this now is starting to add up. It's not necessarily in and of itself, in the beginning of talking about it, seeming like it's going to mean that much. But on the other side of it, it is highly important, highly effective in changing the way people, will say, gain meaning from existence. If someone expects to have a meaningful existence, they need to have spiritual thought with intelligent, active perception. That's the ticket. And most people are going the opposite direction, so they have a relatively small or missing meaning in existence. Wow. That's a big deal. All right, let's talk a little bit more about some of the ramifications in science, and then we'll try to apply this to daily activities and how we can probably learn a lot from this whole show. If we apply it to science, one of the elements that science likes to do is to find truth. It's a laudable thing, right? But it's not that easy to do, because truth is the thought in the monastic or mental world, and it's mostly represented in science by mathematics. And the problem with it is this. Right now, the mathematics hasn't grown to the level where it's matching spiritual thought and intelligent perception. It's not there. The mathematics needs to include those concepts within itself. Now, I've written some about this and done some math with it, and it could be that such a system can be developed. As a matter of fact, it's almost a certainty. As a matter of fact, I happen to know that in some higher parts of the astral world, and especially in the mental world, that's already happened. It's just not here yet. Now, you could say, oh, come on. What do you mean, the mental world, man? Well, it's where we're all headed to, so you'll be able to check me out someday about that. But it's already there. It's just not here. And people like me aren't well listened to in the scientific community. So it is. It's not likely that within my lifetime, the math which even I have proposed will be even read about, much less understood. But regardless of that, we need to be going beyond this concept, therefore, of using math to find truth, because the math itself is fallacious. It's based upon principles in science which are wrong. And so until we get to a clearer math that includes spiritual thought and intelligent perception, there's no way to resolve the problem, because the math itself is too limited. And it doesn't have these big representations in it, which could be put in it, but have yet to be done. All right, so then where does that leave the scientific model, since math is kind of, right now, there's not a math that's really working for us? Then what can we do? Well, one of the things that could be done, and it is possible, is it's possible to visit some parts of other dimensions and to do actual measurements and other things. You can start deriving the mathematical realm there, as well as you can come up with a broadly painted understanding of how the overall universe works, extrapolated by a few different, smaller differences between dimensional parts of the universe that humans can presently visit. And so we have that capability. Not too many people are exploring it from that particular way. I did. Some other people I know have done that. But for the most part, it's not done. Why should it be done? Because it's the easiest way to gain some insight about how the universe works. It's very difficult when the math doesn't work because you got to invent the math first to make it work. And when the perception of the present world is so faulty and so few people have enough consciousness along with their choices to use that consciousness so that their thought is strong enough in God's direction, spiritual thought that's very, very powerful, and then they haven't disciplined their body so their perceptions are in line with that thought well enough so they can come up with new and better ways of understanding what the real physics or metaphysics is of reality. Especially here in the physical world where it's most difficult to do this. All right, so there are some interesting elements to that. Can we make it so we don't live a less meaningful life, wasting most of the time, which we tend to do, while we're physically alive, and going on to deal with many of the elements of the wasted time and the wasted energy in the next dimension we live in, which is the astral realm? People can spend way over half of their lifetime in the astral world attempting to correct their illusions that they garnered from the physical world. And then they could spend about a quarter to a third of the time or more that they live in the mental world doing the same thing. So that's a significant amount of time because, as I explained, time is dilated. Time goes slower when people exist in a reality in which their differences between gravity, we'll call it, exist at huge levels in comparison to other people. And that's what happens here. In the physical world, we have an extremely dense world with high gravity. So to people living in other worlds, where that is not true, by the way, to them, we are barely moving. We're barely moving. Time itself slows down. And so you have a huge counter difference between the two perspectives of reality. What happens to the people in the next dimension is that their time is tremendously expanded. They have a lot more time that they live within. But if we could perceive them at all, they would be moving at incredibly fast speeds because we would not be able to use our perceptions while they are controlled by the matter of this dimensionality here. The only way we can perceive them is to go to their reality, but then everything slows down in relationship here. And very little time is being used up here, while a great deal of time is being expanded upon and being used for life and living in the next world. Now, you could also claim that less time is being wasted, though, by people necessarily in the astral world, because they have more time to live in, and yet they may sometimes live more spiritually, so their thought is closer to God's. Their perception is better because they have an added dimension to it, so their perception is better. And when the two come together and they're used appropriately, folks in the astral world live a expanded life. They can live hundreds of years relative in their time. And they have the ability to perceive better than we do. And their thought is a little bit clearer, especially their astral thought, because each dimension has a peculiar type of thought based upon time and space that works better for them. In the astral world, creative imagination works better than how we tend to think in the physical world. And the results are that they can create almost anything with just a creative imagination. because the energy follows thought thousands and thousands of times greater. And people have the opportunity to have reality based upon how they think. Now, if two people are perceiving and thinking in or around each other, they can alter each other's ability to change energy in antipodal ways that produce unfortunate negative effects. One person wants something one way, another way. They keep changing it back and forth based upon their own desires. Now, that's easy to avoid because there's another dimension of time and space which happens to deal with the phase relationship of and movement of energy. So if you just don't want to be in the same place somebody else is, you only have to move in one of the dimensions to change where you are. And that's pretty easy to do, actually. So where people find themselves to be and where they end up is based very much on how they are creatively thinking, using, in the case of the next dimension, time and space, the majority of the time, a significant amount of a creative imagination. Now, do they still think mentally? Yes, because their personality actually exists in the mental world. But when they want to create something, they think astrally, because that produces an actual reality. Someone imagines a certain thing. Well, let's say they imagine a very intricate sewing machine, okay? And they can instantly create such a sewing machine. Now, the sewing machine will do what they want it to do, provided their creative imagination is strong enough to see the sewing machine doing it that way. But the internal mechanisms that would normally be involved in that in the physical world are totally absent. The machine simply behaves the way the person imagines the machine to be behaving, and it does so. So things are much more animated in the astral world than they are in the physical world. Think about it this way. In the physical world, something doesn't move until you apply force to it. Where in the astral world, movement is happening continuously by not applying force, but by producing a clear imaginative effect which animates whatever it is that is in our creative imagination. Wow. So anything that has a creative imagination can create movement in the astral world. That's pretty interesting. And when we talk about animals, they are also residents, in part, during part of their life, in the astral world. And again, the word animal comes from animation. They are animated. And it's so well put because animals use their creative imagination more than we do. But it's in compensation for the fact that they have very minimal amounts of mental thought. We have much. That's a considerable difference. All right, so the astral world is composed of people who are using their creative imagination to achieve all kinds of outcomes, and the things, quote-unquote, that they create, they're out of astral energy. Work because the desires of the people are incorporated with their creative imagination together to produce the effect. But there are no gears, there are no wires, or necessarily even a singular power supply. Everything is very different. Wow. See, I find that this is intriguing. When we talk about metaphysics, it's oftentimes stated that the astral world is virtually vacant without higher-level animals and human beings present, because it's our creative imagination that leads to almost everything that exists there. Sure, lower-level animals can go there, even some plants. But the problem is that they can't do very much unless they're assisted, usually by higher-level animals and people. Yeah. It's our thought that is strong enough to make that world really work. And it does. Now, we can't use the same skills here because energy doesn't follow thought anywhere near what it does in the astral world. So no matter how strong your thought is here, it has a minimal level. Now, if you can get enough people together, all thinking the same way at the same time, and they're all strong thinkers, you could get some pretty interesting happenings. There could be a significant alteration. But the chances of that occurring, of course, are very low. So here we have these limitations. There are virtually none. Even for people in the lower subworlds, where energy follows thought not nearly as well as it does in the higher ones. Still vastly greater than here. Vastly. All right. Well, let's take a little break at this point. You can think about what I just said. And I just want to mention that if you happen to be around this coming Monday, April 16th, I'm going to be at an April event at Barnes & Noble in the Tempe Marketplace from 7 to 8:15 p.m. That's Monday, April 6th. And it's going to just be a metaphysical discussion. Now, this is going to be more of a discussion, truly, than I usually do. Sometimes I just sit and answer questions. Sometimes I talk about a subject. This is going to be about a discussion. And it could be about any of the things that interest the people who are going to be there. And we're going to kind of sit in a circle. It's going to be a little different than I usually do. And talk about various things that people want to discuss about. And so if you want to do that, you can come from 7 to 8:15 p.m. Barnes & Noble, Tempe Marketplace. It's off of McClintock Drive, just east of University. And if you, even if you don't live in Phoenix, if you happen to be in town at the time, come by. Love to see you. And if you are coming, let us know, because we have to try to make sure we have enough seating and that sort of stuff. It's a little tight sometimes. So you might give us a call and just say, oh, I'm going to be there. And that will help us plan. Planning is good. Also, I want to mention that if you haven't tried it, you should, and that's 5G Jesus. Why? Because it really works. And it helps you to deal with things that most people say they don't think they can, like pains, without having to take narcotics or traditional analgesics. And this stuff does work for most people. And if you haven't heard, it is on sale. So it's a time to buy it, because we've got plenty, and you can use whatever you can over the next few years. You don't have to buy it every month or two. You can stock up if you want. It's good for a while. As long as you don't keep it in a very hot or, you know, hostile kind of environment. And I've used it. I know lots of other people who use it, and it works. We've got someone new around, and he's helping us do a number of things. And he had a pain for 20-some-odd years that he was not able to get out of. Every day, wake up in severe pain, like 8, 8.5, or higher pain levels out of 10. And live throughout the day that way. Horrible. And couldn't do a lot of things because it would just aggravate the pain worse. He had a lot of physical injuries and some other things in his younger days that had led to this. But there's other factors. Well, he's been on the Jizik regimen for a couple months now, and his pain's gone. For all intents and purposes, the guy's pain-free. And that's an example. Not everybody's going to get that same kind of relief, but most people do get a significant amount. So it's worth trying. And you can get it by going to, and I'm going to see if I can find it at my desk here, for the website. Here it is, buyjizik.com, buyjizik.com. You can also call 602-431-5762 and talk to somebody about this. You can order from that person as well. So you got a couple options of how to get buyjizik. It's also sold in a few stores. So there's a number of ways to get it, and certainly give it a try. I think you will find it's definitely worthwhile. And I will mention one other product, and that's Ideal Cellsorption Resveratrol, which is a mouthful, which is something also I've been taking every day, twice a day, for years now, and I swear by it. It really helps to improve senses and reduce aging. That's what it does, the biggest thing that reduces aging. And so it's well worth using. Well worth it. And you can get that, too, from the same sources I just gave you a number to. And I think there's also a website you can go to, but I'm not sure if I've got that right now. Let's see if I've got it. I've got a lot of stuff on my desk here. I'm not sure it's here with me. But, at any rate, you could also contact Angels Wisdom Distributors, and they can refer you to the people who are marketing the Jizik and resveratrol and how to get that as well. All right, so let's get back to the show and talk about this question of changing our perceptions so that we can work within the realities and improve the meaning in our lives, which is a great thing to do. And I'll explain more about meaning. Maybe I should do that right now. Let's talk about meaning. Why is it that life seems to be unmeaningful for so many people, or a lacking of meaning? Well, meaning, by definition, is a way of syncing together your creations with the greater creations of everyone else, all together. When you do that, life becomes more meaningful because time and space in relationship to yourself change. And as I explained earlier in the show, you're getting closer to this dynamic of understanding the relationship of metaphysics, that there is a direct relationship between not wasting time, not creating space between yourself and other people, and being able to create things that last forever and are the things, activities, that are connected to and a part of God. And God made it so that we can be creators, not just it. It is a great creator. It created us. It created all of life. But beyond life, life itself is allowed to be creative in God's plan. And so we have a great opportunity to get closer to our Creator while we're being more creative. And at the same time, reducing the space between ourselves and others is a great thing. Increasing the activity between ourselves and others without producing forces, which reduces our perception. And all that leads to a more meaningful existence. Wow. Now, I said that rather fast. I know you may not have kept up with everything, but still, it's a big deal. It's a big deal. So when I talk about life being more meaningful, you can see why that's such a big factor. And it's something that people really want. They want a more meaningful life, right? If you don't have a meaningful life, it's a bad life, right? It's a miserable life, yeah. And so this is a part of why I am spending so much time sometimes talking about metaphysics, because it opens the door to leading people into meaning and into a greater existence than what they had before. That great existence can be amazing. Sometimes it's greatly challenging. And sometimes it's brutal because of illusions. If we were without illusion, we would not suffer. And we would not have a lack of meaning. But we are within illusion, and we need to kind of, as much as possible, mitigate that. There are quite a few ways to mitigate illusion. And the thought and perception model really does apply. One of the things that I suggest is that people increase their choices by being more creative in their life and attempt to be creative while at the same time they are either increasing the level of inclusiveness and consciousness at the same or possibly even a greater rate. So if you can do that, that's a big deal. That's a huge, huge deal. And this is what so many of the great, we'll say, gurus have suggested at times, the great spiritual thinkers, to raise our purpose in life, our creations, while we also at the same time raise our consciousness. That means your thought is becoming unified with spirit itself. God's thought. You and spirit are becoming one together. Now, to finish the equation, you need to improve your perceptions. Perception is helped by having thought that is as high in spiritual content as possible. But thought alone will not finish the equation. Perception comes from discipline. Discipline comes from using the bodies and the senses of the bodies in exactly the ways that they were designed by our Creator, by God, for the purpose of growing ourselves to be more godly, more like God. If we do that, then our perception grows tremendously through this thing called spiritual discipline. Spiritual discipline has nothing to do with somebody else telling you what to do. It has to do with doing it for and within yourself. And it requires understanding what each body is that you have to perceive with and how each part of that body's perceptions are connected to a specific sense, and how to improve those senses in a very reasonable and scientific way. Wow. It could take a whole lifetime of life in a specific dimension to even get close to getting perception right, because spiritual discipline takes a long time. And in the process, you may find some things you thought were correct to do failed in raising perception. It may have actually increased in perception or illusion and caused a distortion in your ability to perceive reality and in your ability to create new, more reality. All right, so this is one of the tools we've got. We've got this tool, and we can use the tool effectively if we choose to. Yeah. Is it difficult to do? Yep, it is. Particularly while you're physically alive, it's very difficult to raise perception and improve thought, but not impossible. Motive has a lot to do with whether or not you will be successful with this. If your motive is only for self-gain, even if it's only for your own self's sake, you have more meaning in life, it may not work. Now, I know we're talking about having a more meaningful life, but the paradox of that meaningful life is that you can't want it for its own sake. It can be the result of desiring it for other people. It can also be the result of desiring it for all life, people being part of them, but not by any stretch all of them, and for God as well. Then you get much closer to being able to achieve it because you're not seeking it for selfish reasons. It's a contradiction in terms to seek to be spiritual in thought and, we'll say, totally intelligent in action from correct and right perception and right actions, coming from the right perceptions. Provided that you do these things, you've got to get it to the point where you want to do it more for others than for yourself, and eventually for others, even if it doesn't do it for you. Wow. That's a big deal. This is where the inclusive side of things comes, and why sometimes it's better to raise consciousness a little higher than to raise creation. Because the consciousness gives you the ability, gives all of us the ability, to be able to understand better our misperceptions and to change faster the misperceptions which lead to activities which are fallacious, unintelligent, incomplete. Yeah. Now, one thing I will say, and I want to bring this in, that when you elevate consciousness as a direct act of discipline, spiritual discipline, and a consciousness exceeds to some significant level, greater than the amount of choices, the first part of thought that you're making, and creation and purpose, etc., the results can be suffering. Wow. You didn't know that. Okay, well, let me explain why that happens. You see, even though it's a bit better sometimes to raise your consciousness so that you can serve other people better, it's a pretty big sacrifice because you won't be as creative in your life if you do that. It won't be in perfect balance. And the results can sometimes lead to some levels of suffering. Now, to really get over that, you have to develop something called Atmic or Nirvanic consciousness. It goes beyond the Buddhic point. Buddhic level consciousness doesn't completely resolve this issue, but this Atmic consciousness does. And it's okay to sometimes suffer in order to help others to improve and to become greater, even at some cost of yourself. Now you could say, but I thought suffering comes from lowering consciousness, not from lowering creativity. That's true. If you raise consciousness beyond your levels of creativity, there is some level of suffering. And if you lower your consciousness below the levels of creativity, lower them, you also will suffer. But the greatest suffering comes from when you lower consciousness and you do not gain any intelligent activity, nor do you gain any creation that supports intelligent activity, but only unintelligent activity. Then you become dark. And that eventually leads to suffering. But there is a time variance. The perception you have reduces, so you don't perceive the suffering for a fairly long time. And so for people who choose the dark path, an evil path, they may not recognize their level of potential suffering, we'll say, until it gets very extreme. And then, of course, it's usually too late for them to resolve it, so the suffering is extreme for a long time. So So this is an equation that needs some balancing to maintain no suffering or very little. And if you're willing to accept some suffering, sometimes it's worthwhile, because the amount that you can serve and help others can sometimes be a benefit. It's up to you what you choose to do, but I'm just telling you how it works. And since you learn how the rules are through this kind of an explanation, you can choose what you want to do and how you want to do it. That gives you almost complete freedom and mastery over your life. And tell me that isn't meaningful even in and of itself. So when we discuss this sort of thing, we are discussing the omnipotent aspects. First omniscient, and then eventually omnipotent aspects of how a human being could become something much, much, much greater than it normally could be. And these sort of things, I can tell you, are known to be true for those who have traveled to other dimensions where it's easier to achieve these results in much faster periods of time, and the results can be more visibly seen. So in the astral dimensions, particularly the higher ones, these things I'm telling you are obvious. And people don't have to spend a lifetime trying to figure them out. They're even more true, more easily found, more discoverable in the mental world. And so people fairly quickly realize some of the things I'm telling you. That means people in the mental world tend to live this last part of their personality's life in a state in which they are more enlightened than not. They are more accurately perceptive, and their thought is more spiritual than not. That's a pretty good deal. But it's unfortunate that it can't take place for so many people while they're physically alive, where it is most difficult to achieve it. And unfortunately, for a lot of people, it's more elusive than it is clearly capable for them to do. All right, so let's go on with this whole concept. When we realize that this is the method, or the rules, or the laws of the universe, the sooner we get it to the point where we use this as our model, the faster our life becomes meaningful, and at least the amount of suffering we experience is within our control, for the most part. It's better to do it right here, right now. Way better. Because once you leave this realm, you leave this body, you leave this world of solid energies, and you can't come back here with less illusion, because while you lived here, you created some karmic implications which would most likely limit your next physical life to some extent. If you can get rid of all the illusions and correct the karma, you'd be fine. But the problem with karma is it's all based on energy. And when you leave the physical world, you leave physical energy. So problems you had in the physical world that you created karmically can't be dealt with in the astral or mental world. Consequently, you're coming back to this world in the not too distant future. And in that life, you're going to have some serious issues, making it harder and sometimes creating suffering and problems for you, because you didn't correct them while you were here. So the bottom line is, you want things to be better. Don't wait till you die from the physical world and go to live in the astral world, because you've lost the opportunity to correct the karmic issues that are going to come and plague you in your next next physical life. And somewhat, some of it's going to also go on to affect you, of course, in the astral and mental lives, too. So this is the opportunity, this is the time we have to really do great things. And so many of us do so little and pay dearly for a lack of meaning in our life, well, at least physically. Now, in the astral world, let's go to that and talk about that. People do have, over time, more meaningful lives if they get this whole concept from tonight's show. They kind of put it together. They will change their lives for the better. The problem there is that they still waste a lot of the first part of their lives not getting it, and then they slowly get it and waste a lot of time in that process as well. Much better to go directly to the astral world and say, hey, I'm going to do the most meaningful life things I could possibly do here, and I won't be held back by my own desires. Instead, I'm going to live this life much as I would have preferred to live all of my physical life. But at least now, I can choose to live astrally this way, and it is easier. It's just that the total amount of creation that you produce is going to be a lot less, because here is where the creation is most needed, and also it's where it's most difficult to do. But nonetheless, can be the most rewarding because it's so needed here, particularly on this planet at this time. Yes, there's some planets you could go to, and when you go to the astral world, you might have already lived a pretty good life, spiritually speaking, in the physical world. And yet you go on, and you don't have to play catch-up as much. But those worlds may be sacred. They may not have any evil on them. Or if they still have some evil on them, it isn't as profound and found every corner of the world. But instead, it's very limited and manageable, if it exists at all. If it's on a sacred planet, that means it doesn't. It exists to some level, and if it were a sacred planet, no evil would exist on it at all, by definition. So, yeah, while we're here, this is the challenge. The physical world is where evil plays out its hand. This is the world where it's going to do terrible things. And it's a world where it might be us, might be the side of light. Now, if it's going to do that, probably means that this experiment is going to fail. Because the experiment Earth is in is to overcome evil. Not have evil overcome yet. But we're teetering. We're teetering at that, on those levels where maybe it isn't going to go so well for us. But we can change it. We can change it by our thought and our perceptions. And we can make our life so much better. Now, in the astral world, people recognize something that they don't recognize as well in the physical, and that is that working together can be more helpful than working alone. The individual is still very respected, probably more so, in the astral sub-world than in the physical. But at the same time, even with the level of respect that exists there, it's nowhere near perfect. And that's not the time to be looking forward to being inclusive. This is the time when it's most difficult to do, actually, to get people to work together in a spiritual sense. If you wait till the astral world, it will not give you the same kind of boost towards becoming one with your Creator. It will give you something, but it will not be the greatness that can come from doing it here right now. All right, so if if we're going to make a shift, it's best to do it here. But the astral world, we do get a second chance, and it's easier. The physics makes it easier. The increase in consciousness among us makes it easier. And in addition, the thing that makes it most easy is that energy is following thought thousands of times more than here. This allows us to virtually do anything in terms of using our perceptions in creation. Now, if you use it frivolously and without any concern for the waste, and the waste in time, waste in energy, then your experiences in the astral world can be karmically a significant albatross. And you could find yourself in a situation in which your time spent in the astral world was not successful in bringing you closer to your creator. For most people, they do get somewhat closer. That's the good news. The bad news is that they don't usually do it early enough. And that always leads to significant consequences. So I wouldn't wait. Also, if you don't wait here, when you die and you go to the astral world, everything will be much easier. Your findings of life will become more profound. Yes, all that's possible. It really is. Now, finally, let me talk about the mental world and what happens there. When people get to the mental world, they find God much easier. They aren't belabored by the two lower bodies, so their feelings aren't interfering with truthful thinking. And their physical sensations aren't as well, because those two bodies are gone. But what's left is a mental body. Now, the mental body is seeking truth, and the person almost immediately is forced to deal with all of the egotistical, arrogant, we'll call them lies, they told themselves and others. So that's really what the first part of life there is about. And it's really also about getting mental thought and perceptions to an accurate level. I did a whole show on just that some time ago. And what that leads you to is the truth. Because you become wise. You become giving and wise in the way that you relate to others. When you do that, wow, great things happen. Those great things are that your senses start to unify together in that body. The amount of mistakes you make are very small. The time that you have to do anything in is much greater. You're not wasting time. And your relationships with others eventually, when you're not being egotistical anymore, is just amazing. Because you're in with others who are acting semi-like souls. So you get to have a taste of being a soul. And it becomes much easier to give up the personality for the soul during this process. Now, for a lot of people, that sounds scary. But the best way to become your soul again is to consciously integrate elements of the personality into your soul and leave those elements that are selfish out on a fully conscious level. When you do that, you, in full consciousness, you don't fall asleep and then wake up being your soul. That's what many people do. But in full consciousness, you just let go of the selfish aspects of the personality. The unselfish ones just move into, become part of the soul. While you, in all glory, walk into being that soul, which it has its own existence outside of you, except you just joined it. And you don't feel any threat You don't feel any like, gee, I'm going to join something that's not going to be me anymore. No. You suddenly become super great. You've joined this great being that was your personality with this great being, which is the soul, together. There's almost a ecstatic and blissful enlightenment that takes place. Wow. And that is what is awaiting each of us, unless we're evil. Evil people give that up. Talk about stupid, that's it, right? But we all are going to be going through this process. Now, not everybody will get to their soul by fully being conscious. But if you listen to the show and you start doing some of this stuff right now, you read some of the books up and you read this, whatever, and you start serving. That's the most important thing, service, serving, real service. You will do that. You will become your soul in this fully conscious way, the best way possible. And your life will turn to be more meaningful, even while you're physically alive here. Yes, you can't change energy by your thinking alone, but you can change it, just the way everybody else does, through perception and taking right actions. It's just that your perception is going to be so much greater, the right actions are going to go so much easier, and your thinking is so much along the lines of God, meaning you make far less mistakes, and you do not sacrifice and suffer. Well, I should say you don't sacrifice, but you don't suffer nearly as much as you could. The results are tremendous. Absolutely tremendous. You have a marvelous possibility of attaining a truly great life. And I don't care how old you are. This is not an age issue. It doesn't matter whether you're 80 years old or if you're 18 years old. What matters is, are you making those choices that are truly spiritual? And are you connecting them and consciously using those choices to move your thought and your actions in the right directions, right being part of God? You know it's part of God. You don't have to be told. You know it's part of God. Because the actions join time and space together. They remove forces, and you become much closer to others. All that happens. But so it isn't some nebulous thing, well, I don't know if I'm ever going to know about that, I'm ever going to figure it out. No, this is the real way that it works. Real way. And if you don't believe me, why not try it for like 6 months? For that matter, try it for 6 weeks. I don't know. Just get your feet wet in it. That's what it's going to take. But try doing some of these things and see if it works for you. If it's not working or if you have problems, call me. I'm available. And I will help you go over these things. I will. And find methods, ways of acting and functioning more soul-like while you're physically alive. I mean, wouldn't life be great if that's the way you were living it? Well, here's the opportunity. Okay, now, so that's the breadth of it, going through the entire life of the human, single lifetime. You could see that these parts of metaphysics are very important to understand. Now, let's get down to the most practical things. What about people that you have relationships with who are around you in the physical world? How does this thought that is spiritual, a perception that involves right actions, and intelligent actions, become manifest if the people around you are selfish, hostile, negative, demeaning. They may hate the show that you listen to. And who knows what else? What about that? How do you deal with that kind of situation right here? Well, one of the sides to purpose and creation is that anything that prevents that from taking place, you may have to dissociate yourself from or destroy the relationship to. Harsh words. But it's part of the process. It's almost impossible to be fully creative without destroying some of the older relationships and elements of relationships that have been holding you from becoming a more conscious being. If that's what's happening, well, the answer is destruction. You don't destroy the person, you destroy the nature of your relationship with them, because it is preventing either of you from benefiting. Now, does that mean you should just go around and tell all your friends you're not going to see them anymore because, you know, you're growing, you're changing? No, it's just the opposite. Actually, it means that the opportunity to be of service to others, now listen carefully, the opportunity to be of service to others has been rebuffed and rejected by them. And once they have convincingly made that the point, then it's time for you to destroy the nature of that particular relationship with that person. Don't destroy the person, just the relationship. You move on, as some people would say. It may not be directly moving on. You may still have to keep some elements of the relationship for a while. But you don't put more time and energy into the parts that the other person has made it clear are not the way they want a relationship with you. They may want some other kind of relationship, but that's their problem because you don't have to capitulate with that. It's just that you have to be discriminatory. And you need to know when you can no longer be of service to that person without the qualifications of wasted time. Sure, you can try to be of service to people indefinitely, but when it becomes wasted time and energy, and you could be doing more for many others much better and more often than the time, then that's what you should be doing. You see? And it should not be that you feel either guilty or concerned that the other person may not like the fact that you are saying, well, you have a great life now, and I'm moving on to do other things. Did what I can. I hope it was of some service, but if it wasn't, I apologize. And I'm going on. Wow. That's a different perspective. Do we have an obligation to continue our suffering and continue our being stalwarted by various people's agendas? And the answer is very simple. It is unwise. It is destructive to the person, not to the relationship, but to the person, to continue to give to people unwisely. It's unwise. And to continue to give people in ways that they just take. And there's no reciprocity. There's no improvement in their consciousness. There's no improvement in their perception or thought. Well, guess what? Time to say bye. Yeah. Really? I know that's difficult for some people, but I can't just leave them. Yes, you can. You could just leave them. That may not be the answer of how you're going to deal with it, but that's one of them. Yeah. Okay, let's move to another practical issue, practical concern. kind of a very special issue of the first, but nonetheless quite of great concern to a large segment of the population. It's how do I deal with children? I can't sever my relationship with my children. So how do I deal with my children if they're in the same ballpark? What if I've made some mistakes in the past, my kids didn't turn out the way it might have been? They're now 12 years old instead of 2 years old. Not so easy to change. What do I do? Well, here's the interesting proposition. They're still malleable. They're still trainable. They're still teachable. You can alter their thought and perception, but only if you act as an example for them and not just as, I'm your parent and you're going to do what I say. At that age, if there is something wrong, that model won't work. So instead, the model that does work for a lot of, we'll say, pre-adolescents and adolescents, or whatever the age of the child is, I'm just using the more difficult examples, is, and has been, do as I do, not as I say. Be an example for them. Help them to attain the same levels in their own way of what the greatness is of the example. Make it meaningful for them to make the changes. And push in the direction that is positive, but one that is not without either authority, because you do have authority if you're still their parent, but at the same time is neither arbitrary nor totalitarian and done in a dictatorial method. Here is the point. If you can't reach your kids, who is, and what are their motives, they're most likely not going to be very good. And you don't want them being the pseudo-parent, a surrogate that is a monster, and there's plenty of them around. All right. So you can do that. Be the example. It's better if you start early, but if it's too late and you just heard me say this now and you, my kids are, just do the best you can. And once an adult, it's a totally different relationship then. And then you go to the issues about adults. They may have been your children once, but once they reach what is adulthood, where it's their thought and perception that is guiding their life, period. That's it. You're done in parental role. Can you then have an effect on them? Well, as much as you would any friend or associate or anyone else. Yes. But you may have no special privileges because you were their parents. They may resent you because you were, if you screwed up. Yeah. Let's talk about spouses in relationships with people who are significant others. Those are unique because they usually involve sexuality, and in such, you're providing a piece of the experiment for someone to become another person through you and vice versa. That kind of contract has with it a more, we'll say, long-term commitment. The commitment is there because of this unique nature. It doesn't mean it's forever. It may not be even for beyond this physical life. Depends. But it is more committed than sometimes even raising children. And it has with it some important questions about thought and perception. Since you're becoming like the other person, you're not just learning how to think in a spiritual way and perceive in a way that's intelligent, or right action, just for yourself, you're also doing it for now a whole other person at the same time. Yeah. The only other way you're going to have that experience is if you join or become part of a spiritual group. Now, what is a spiritual group? It's people who are doing just what I just said. It can be very religious, or it may not fall within any religious doctrine. But that's a spiritual group. How is that different from a cult? A cult is the exact opposite. A cult is where someone else is telling you how to think, and telling you how to behave, and saying that you must do that on a continual basis, and virtually preventing you from being able to learn something by the sheer dictatorial nature of it. In spiritual groups, you almost always have a leader. What does the leader do? But the leader helps people, but they help them by mostly example. Yes, they sometimes may limit them when they're being destructive, but destruction is not necessarily the only yardstick that you use when trying to restrict them. And so you have to be very careful in that vein. Also, some groups involve teaching. They have teachers. Well, if they do, the teacher's role is to change, help to change people by constantly teaching. That's it. That's their job. That's my teaching. Trying to be an example of the teaching, yes, but teaching for sure. And teaching involves sometimes, unfortunately, repetition. Now, if people abuse the repetition, then the leader should come in and do something about that. But still, it's going to involve repetition. You can't teach somebody just one time and they're going to do something. Now, if you go into the hundreds or thousands, that may be a problem, and it shows you have some difficulties in what's going on in the process. Spiritual teaching is probably the most important kind of teaching. And between spouses, it is part of the relationship. They are each other's teachers. Because remember, you're becoming the other person in thought and perception. Now you say, well, I can understand the thought part, but what do you mean, perception? Eventually you will gain their senses and them yours. And the thought part is eventually they will read your mind and yours then. Oh, I know it sounds too far out there to be believable, but it's true. You can reach that level. And it's an amazing level. So these are the practical sides to understanding the metaphysics of thought, perception, and reality. And if we have that all together and we use it on a regular basis, it can be a liberating and a blissful, joyful, and eventually a blissful life. Not necessarily an easy life. Don't think that something is joyful or blissful because it's easy. Because there's very few things like that. Most of it's going to be difficult, challenging. So be prepared for that aspect as well. Well, I hope this has all come together for you. I don't know if I did it in a way that does, but it maybe gives you a different viewpoint on the universe and your role in the universe. And you maybe can see the bigger picture. Because that's kind of what I'm drawing today. It's a big picture. Okay, and maybe I'll see some of you on Monday night, this coming Monday. If I do, we can have more discussion about this very subject or anything else that you'd like to talk about. And until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.